Hi, and welcome to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. My name is Emily Thomas, and I am a mom on a mission to get a new perspective. Y'all, I am not proud of it, but I spent far too long waiting for my daily irritations to resolve before the good times can begin. And I'm thinking the struggles are just going to keep coming, so I might as well get a new plan. God promises if we persevere through our daily struggles, our character will be built and we'll end up with a hope that doesn't disappoint. And I don't know about you, but my hardest days happen when I've lost sight of that hope. So if that's your story too, join me each week as I interview someone who has passed from just struggling to struggling well. Hey guys, and welcome back to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. This is episode 35, and we are talking with my friend Wynn Elder. Wynn is a haven maker. Her heart is for gathering women together around authentic, vulnerable conversation. She's walked through infertility for years and is part of a lovely group of women who started a getaway for women dealing with infertility called the Carrie Camp. In this talk, we cover the lonely grief of infertility, how to navigate making new friends when you're isolated, and she talks also about a really great tradition that her mom started that still impacts her every day. Just a quick reminder, if you wanted to snag a red Mom Struggling Well campfire mug for a mama in your life, Mother's Day is this Sunday. Order that business today and I'll get it to her by Mother's Day. Unless she lives like in Australia or the Congo. Come on, be real. I'm not a miracle worker. If you want to be your mom's favorite, I would give her this mug. I gave one to my mom and my siblings do not have a chance. Does not matter what they get her, I win. All right, let's get started with my chat with Wynn. Hi, Wynn. How are you this morning?
Hi, Emily. I'm doing good.
Good. Thanks for talking to me today.
I'm excited. I'm in my favorite pink room with my coffee and I'm excited.
Perfect. What color pink is it?
Well, it's the only pink. It's the only room in the house that I did not paint over when we moved into our home.
Okay.
The people that lived here before us were here for 18 years, and she doesn't know what the color was. It was like a special mixture, but it's like a corally. It's really, this is like my funky room that has blue and yellow and green and pink. It's like my kids' craft slash my reading room.
It sounds so happy.
It's very happy. I wish That's I knew what awesome. The color was because people ask me all the time, but I don't know.
Do they? Do they see it in pictures?
Yes.
And think, that's funny.
Yes.
So tell us about yourself and your family.
Yeah. Well, I have been married to Stephen for almost 10 years. And together we have two kids, Camp and Asher. They both just turned 4. They're from Ethiopia. So we adopted them. They were 7 and 8 months when they came home.
Okay.
And they just turned 4 this spring. So October will be 4 years since they've been home. And
Hold it. They're twins, but tell me about that. They're different months.
They're 3.5 weeks apart.
But they're twins.
So they're not twins. They're not biologically related.
Okay.
Well, I just wrote about this on my blog this week about, because people ask me all the time, are they real siblings? I'm like, and people are not trying to be rude when they ask those questions. They're just curious. And I have taken it upon myself to try to be gracious in educating people that the words that they mean to say is, are they biologically related? And no, they are not. They've been together since they were a month old in the orphanage in Ethiopia.
Okay. Yeah, I get asked if I had like kids of my own. I'm like, yeah, well, they're my own. But no, yeah,
they're
people
my
don't
own
know.
Kids.
And that's fine.
People don't know. Yeah. So they're basically like twins, but they're not actually twins.
Okay.
But they've shared a room ever since they've been home. And I mean, for all they know, they probably think they're twins. I mean, they know they are real siblings. That was the point of my post yesterday. They are real siblings, even though they are not blood related.
And I don't know about yours, but mine are also not blood related and they fight like cats and dogs, which lets me know they are real siblings.
Exactly. I know. That's what they do. They fight and they love each other and they know how to push each other's buttons.
And that's all family is, really.
Exactly. Exactly. So we moved, we were in West Texas for 7 years. And before that, we were in Austin when we first got married and we moved to Bryan College Station.
Oh, yeah.
About a year ago. And my husband's an Aggie and I grew up in Waco. So we are closer to home for sure. But we moved actually to be part of our church that we go to.
What is it?
It's a new church plant. It's called Declaration Church.
Okay.
And it's a sort of a crazy story how we got involved. But we met the pastor at a sandwich shop in Waco. It's been like at this point over 2 years ago, almost three, maybe 2.5 years ago.
Okay.
Then 6 months later, I happened to be in Dallas visiting my sister for her birthday, and I went to church with her that morning at the village.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, there was a guy I met at the sandwich shop, and he was talking about planting a church in his hometown of Bryan, Texas. And I left that day. I was like, I think we're supposed to go be a part of this guy's church plant.
Wow.
My husband thought I was crazy because I had these crazy ideas. And, you know, he probably is just hoping that it's a phase and it'll go away. But exactly a year later, the Lord totally spoke to my husband through our pastor in Midland and made it very clear that we were supposed to be here. And so we packed up and moved down here and didn't really know that many people, but now it's just, it's home.
And how long ago was that?
A little over a year.
That's great. I didn't know you were so close to me. I'm in Dallas.
Yeah, I know. I'm in Dallas a lot now.
Well, that's wonderful. We'll have a coffee. In real life? Mm-hmm. Okay.
We should.
So tell us what you do on the World Wide Web.
On the World Wide Web. Well, I have a blog. I started blogging when we moved to Midland so many years ago, just to sort of keep friends and family updated. And then when we went through the adoption process, it sort of turned into an adoption blog. And really through that is how I met so many amazing friends and just connected with people across the country. And so I still am blogging at winelder.com. But through that, a lot of awesome opportunities have arisen. And I'm a New Day Collection ambassador. So I'm always talking about that online. And
always showing your gorgeous jewelry off. I love your pictures.
Yes.
Because I never know how to wear any of it. So I'm always glad to see pictures of people doing it right.
If you go on Instagram and you look at the hashtag Noonday Style, you can see all sorts of fun ideas of how people live their noonday. So I guess the most recent thing online has been infertility ministry that a few gals and I started called the Care Camp.
Tell me everything about that.
Yeah. So my husband and I have been struggling with infertility for almost 7 years. Okay. And for a while, it was a very silent struggle, meaning like even my own mother didn't know that we were struggling. Oh, wow.
Tell me, let's talk about this because we dealt with infertility for 6 years. Mm-hmm. And I guess you would say we're still dealing with it in that I've never been pregnant, but we're not trying to be pregnant. So
right.
I guess maybe we're done dealing with it. I don't know. Anyway, I didn't want to be that person who was dealing with infertility. So I just didn't even acknowledge it. I didn't want to read about it. I didn't want to become an expert on it because I was pretending like it wasn't happening.
Right.
So there is a lot of women dealing with silent infertility.
There still are. And I have people tell me, and I'll tell you about our retreat in a little bit, but people who tell me, I really want to come because I need the support, but I don't really want to admit that that is something that I struggle with. I'm like, I get it. We tried that first year of trying to get pregnant was so horrible. We were not in any sort of hurry to start a family. And then overnight, God totally changed my heart. And you think like, okay, God changes your heart. He tells you it's time. You think it's just going to happen. And that first year, we were in Midland and that was just, you know, I was in my mid-20s and everyone was starting to pop out babies. And I remember one night at Bunko.
Effortlessly, right?
Right. At Bunko one night, we made a list and there were 23 people in our town that we were friends with that were pregnant all at the same time.
Oh, man.
And so month after month, it was just so heartbreaking. But actually, I wasn't even able to say that I struggled with that for probably a year and a half or two. I was at Creative for Care, awesome Adopt a Mom's retreat. Do you go to Creative for Care?
I didn't know about it. I lived in China for the most part of our dealing with infertility. Okay.
Well, no, so, Creative for Care is an adoptive mom's retreat, foster and adopt.
Yeah, you told me about that a couple weeks ago. I didn't know about it.
Okay. Well, my friend Lauren Casper that helped start Care Camp with us, she was speaking at Creative for Care about infertility and we were just good friends and I went to support her and hear her talk. And during her talk, the Lord just totally broke me down and I was finally able to say that word out loud, the big I word. Because you don't want to be the infertility girl.
Mm.
You don't want that to be the thing that people know you for. But this is just part of my story and this is how the Lord has written it. And honestly, if we would have gotten pregnant when I wanted to back in however many, 7 years ago, whatever year that was, we wouldn't have Camp and Asher. We would never have traveled to Africa. And that has become a huge passion of ours. There's so many things in our lives that we would not know one thing about. And so I'm thankful for it.
So tell me, what did he say at that moment when you're supporting your friend? How did he change things for you?
I think I just finally was able to break down my pride and be humble enough to say, like, this is my struggle. I need you, God. Like, I can't do this on my own. Like, this is real. And it was quickly after that that I just felt like him say that I was supposed to share about my struggle sort of in the middle of it. Because a lot of people don't. I mean, it's a very silent thing. And I don't know why he gave me any sort of platform or voice that he gave me. And I felt like that was something that I was supposed to share about. And so since the past few years, I've been, the posts I write on my blog about infertility have been the most viewed and commented post, and they're hard to write. And I don't want to be an infertility blogger, and I'm not. But when I write about it, it's very apparent that God is using it.
Yeah. You know what I find interesting? I think most people who have a thing and it's their thing, it's not the thing they wanted. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't want to be an infertility person, but that's what strikes a chord with people. And sometimes we just got to go with it. Like, honestly, Mom Struggling Well, I don't want to struggle. But Mom Struggling Well, my idea of a good time is not struggling. I want to be the person who does it effortlessly, but I'm a mess. And so I thought, well, might as well go with it.
Right.
Now, so you've got children.
Mm-hmm.
And do you ever get feedback that, why is this such a problem for you still? You already have kids. Do you feel like once you had children, I don't know how to ask that question.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
So,
or did you put pressure on yourself to like be fine with it? Since you have kids?
I don't think so. I think that a struggle for me with having the kids is once they came home, I thought that I would be a part of the Real Moms Club after that. I mean, you know, there's years of hearing people talk about being moms and their kids and all the things, and you just feel so left out of that. Mm. And I think I thought, like, okay, once I have kids, like, I'll be a part of this club. And I think that was the biggest thing that surprised me through bringing kids home via adoption is that I still don't have pregnancy stories or birth stories or breastfeeding stories, or there's so many things that I missed out on. And that was a huge struggle for me for a while and something that I really had to deal with overcoming, that I am a real mom. These are my real kids. And while I do not have the story of some of these friends of mine, they don't have the story that I have.
Exactly.
And the story that God has written for me is beautiful, and it was beautifully messy, but I wouldn't trade it. And so I think that in the infertility community, people are so, I don't know, just gracious with each other. Like, there can't be any, well, you can't struggle with this because, you know, XYZ. Sarah, who does Care Camp with me, she has 3 biological kids, but she struggled through treatments for every single one of them. And this has still been part of her ministry and something that God has allowed her to speak into, even though she has biological children.
Okay.
So something that Casey said at Hope Spoken a few years ago really resonated with me. She said what she learned through miscarriage and loss was you can't judge somebody else's grief. And I feel like you can relate that to so many things. You can't judge how somebody else is dealing with something.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned, I think, to be more empathetic through my own struggles, just with people that are struggling with other things. And you can't say, like, you can't lessen the hardship for them. You have no idea what other people are going through.
Right. And you can't assume, well, you have kids, like, get over it, get past it. Why are you still upset about this? Well, secondary infertility is a big deal. It's just as big a deal to people who have kids as it is to people who don't have any kids.
Definitely.
Yeah. So tell me about, I love this idea of thinking you would just automatically be in the Real Mom Club. I did not expect that when I adopted my kids, I would still not feel like a mom. I would look at them and think, I'm raising someone else's kid. And I felt a lot of the way that our kids were entered into the situation, one of them in particular, it was pretty traumatic and it did not go well. And people were not super pleased that I was the mom. Mm. When you adopt through foster care, there's a lot of people who are upset, typically.
Right.
It's not shiny, happy. Everyone's just handing off the baby and you skip around in wildflowers. It doesn't go like that. And so not only did I not get the delivery experience, you know, like you were saying, the pregnancy, the preparation, the whatever, the whole thing didn't go they didn't come into our family easily or effortlessly. It was kind of really hard and painful. So I did not feel like a real mom. And I tried all kinds of things. I tried a necklace with their names on it. Like, I just felt like I was really grasping at things that would help me feel like I wasn't just babysitting someone else's kids. I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
So what did you do to help you feel like, these are actually my kids?
Yeah.
When did you first? Yeah. What did you do? And then how long did it take for that to kind of happen for you?
Yeah, and I think that everybody's story is so different, and it's just one of those things that we can't judge other people's stories or think like, oh, because that happened to this person, it'll happen to me. But for me, our kids were little. I mean, they were 3 and 4 months when we got matched with them. They were 5 and 6 months when we met them for the first time. And I'm not a baby person. Like, I
Me either. Yay.
I want a baby, but I'm still terrified of babies. Like, I'm like that friend that when I would go to the hospital to meet a friend's newborn, they're like, do you want to hold him? I'm like, no, 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 no. Like, terrified that I would drop it. Like, just not, no, no, no. Not, no natural instinct there at all. And it just was really amazing. The day that we met the kids in Ethiopia, and I wrote about this, which I'm so glad I did on my blog, just to have those raw feelings. But I really did feel like I was their mom from that first day. And I know that that is so rare, but I just did. Like, all of a sudden that fear of dropping the kid went away. It was like I knew what to do and how to take care of them. And it just felt so natural from the beginning.
That's so good. Yeah, because I've heard people adopt kiddos and they don't like how they smell.
Uh-huh.
And just there's a lot of attaching that some moms have to do to the children. There's a lot of focus on the children attaching to the parents. Uh-huh. And I think that's super important. But when the attachment doesn't happen immediately in adoption, I think a mom feels like she's failing somehow.
Yeah.
So that was my experience of, I have a kid and I'm still not in the real mom's club.
Yeah.
But for you, it was more the pregnancy experience. Is that what made you feel not a part of it?
Yeah. And I think that's something that I really desire. Like, I want to be pregnant. I want, and to me, having a biological child isn't as much about like, I want someone that looks like me or that shares my DNA. Like, I really am not concerned with that as much. I just really feel like God has placed a desire in my heart to carry a baby and to be pregnant. And so we were talking about earlier, like, some people like, okay, I struggle with this. Like you, like, I have kids, I adopted and I'm great. And sometimes for me, I'm like, why am I not great? Well, why are they fine? Should I be over this? But I think that, I mean, like we keep talking about, everybody's story is different and the desires and the hopes and dreams that God puts in our hearts are different. And a lot of mine too is medical. I have endometriosis.
Okay.
And one of the ways that will lessen that is by giving birth.
Interesting.
And so I'm like, wow, if I could get rid of this horrible disease, chronic disease that I've dealt with every day since I was in high school and have a baby, that would be so awesome.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me about Carry Camp.
Yeah. So there, like we've talked about, a lot of women just do not talk about this struggle. This, I don't know if it's because of shame or denial or what it is, but it's just something that people don't talk about. But it's something that you have to have support for. You cannot walk through this whole journey completely alone. And a lot of women do. A lot of women really, really do. And so
I did. It was not pretty.
Right.
Not pretty.
No, I mean, I did for years too. And especially when a lot of people don't have any friends that are also struggling. And I didn't, when I was struggling in silence, I didn't know anybody else that was having this issue. And so then it's even more isolating. And so God just started to put the pieces together. It was actually at Hope Spoken 2 years ago. My friend Katie Moore that I met through mutual friends for adoption. She has, both of her boys are adopted. She went to high school with Sarah Schneider, mm-hmm. and she knew Sarah and I were both going to be at Hope Spoken, and she told us that we needed to meet. So we met, and then she was like, no, I need you to get a picture together, like, show me. And so through that, getting a picture together, we ended up talking and opening up and talking a lot about infertility and just really felt like God was doing something with the three of us.
Okay.
And then, crazy story. Me and my kids 2 summers ago went on this whole cross country road trip for 21 days.
Okay.
And, my husband was with us for the first like 10 days. So we were 11 days by ourselves driving around the country.
Okay.
And
that sounds fun. How did that go?
They were two. It was so fun. Like, okay. I wish I could do it again.
They
I
were think 2 years
harder
old.
Harder now. They were two.
Oh my goodness.
And I think it will be harder and easier now. Harder because they're potty trained, so we would have to stop a lot more. I mean, then they were like in diapers, so I wasn't having to like cart them into the gas station.
Right.
I just was changing their diapers by myself in the car, but it was so fun. We went around mainly in the Southeast and stayed with different friends. And I had a whole day that I did, a night that I did not account for. And so I was sitting in Atlanta one night and I was like, what are we going to do? It's like, oh, we'll just drive 300 extra miles out of the way and go visit Katie and her family in St. Louis. Great.
Okay.
So we go, and the day before I go, crazy circumstances, Sarah and some of her kids were going to be in St. Louis that same day. We're only going to overlap for like half a day for a wedding. And so we got together with all of our kids and sat in the downtown St. Louis at this water park and just sort of dreamed up this idea for Care Camp.
Okay.
We didn't have a name, but we wanted to just gather women in person and have sort of this retreat to just get away for the weekend and speak life and truth and worship and cry and laugh. And so a month after that, I went to Rwanda with New Day on a storyteller trip called Style for Justice. And we were meeting with this group of women from International Justice Mission, and all their daughters had been raped. So this is like a support group for moms whose daughters had been raped.
Okay.
And they all went around and shared some of their story. And after they did, they got down on the ground on all fours, and we prayed over them. And one of the ladies said, you know, we're really here to carry each other's burdens. Mm-hmm. And I looked at my friend Paige. I was like, Carrie, do not let me forget. And I knew that was the start of what this was going to be and what it was going to look like. And I just remember sharing with our group what my dream was. And they were like, nobody in the Christian community is doing this. Like, this is, you've got to do this. This is such a no-brainer. So it sort of was birthed. And then Lauren came along, and we started an online ministry as well. And so we have guest posters. We do different series on Mondays. We post every Monday.
So where can people find that?
Yeah, it's thecarriecamp.com.
Okay.
And we're on Facebook and Instagram, all those things. But you can subscribe to the blog to not miss. And we only post on Mondays unless we're talking about a retreat. And then we're doing our retreat this September 9th through 11th outside of Nashville. And so last year we did it, and we had 18 girls come, and it was such an amazing weekend. I mean, most people came and they didn't know anybody else. Some of them came with maybe a friend that they had brought along, but it was just such a special time to gather. And we did all the things we wanted to do, just to talk and to laugh and to worship and to cry and to share stories. And there was teaching and good food and sweet time outside around the campfire. And so we are super excited for September. We have about 25 spots left. There'll be about 30 women total.
That's so good.
So it's still intimate and small enough that you really get to know everybody. And now from our group from last fall, we have a private Facebook group, and we are on there. Like, I got on there yesterday and shared a struggle I was having, and just that support and that prayer. It's just been so sweet to carry that through the whole year.
Okay. I think that sounds fabulous, and I wish I could have gone.
No.
That would have been so amazing. Okay, so I have a couple practical questions. So you're dealing for a mom who is dealing with infertility, or I know a lot of people who listen to this show are not actually moms. How do you practically handle things like baby showers and friends who announce their pregnancy? Yeah. Have you found a good way to do that? Because that was always exciting / gut-wrenching at the same time.
It's so hard. And it really just depends on what kind of mindset you're in. And so there's sometimes, I mean, and this maybe sounds bad, but if it's someone who has been struggling with a long time for infertility, I am like over the moon, excited, joyful, like cannot be sad for myself for a second. When it's someone who I know has walked this crazy journey, it gives me so much hope.
Okay.
And I think just for other friends, I hate it when they feel bad telling me they're pregnant. That is the worst, because of course I'm excited for you. Of course, you know, this person that's growing in your belly is going to be like a walking, talking toddler one day that I will be totally in love with. And so let me get past, you know, my own pity party for myself. And I am actually excited for you, and I don't want you to feel bad. I think in educating people and telling my friends what I need from them has been huge over the years. And now most of the time when a good friend is pregnant, they tell me first before they announce it to a big group, which I really appreciate, because that getting caught off guard in a big group when everyone's watching each other's reactions is really hard.
Oh yeah.
Because you need, you know, like, and so I appreciate that they think about that before. And so then it doesn't make it as hard. And I think like with baby showers, everybody's different. Like, you have to give yourself grace in that. And most of the time I still go because it's life and, you know, you want to celebrate, but some people it's too much for them. And so if it's too much for them, it's too much for them. I think everybody's just different, but I think letting your people know how they can support you is so huge.
Okay. It's really good. And then you have to then take a moment and know how could I be supported? That takes some thinking about where are you at and what would work for you.
Yeah. And lots of trial and error to know what was really hurtful.
Yeah. Oh, whoops. I was crying uncontrollably
at our playgroup.
Yes.
Over Chick-fil-A, and you told us you were pregnant, and then I was bawling in my car for an hour. Yeah. You know, like,
my fries are soggy. That hurt. This is embarrassing. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. Thankfully, by God's grace, I think he knew possibly I couldn't handle it. I lived in China and was not around any pregnant women, really, for the majority of the 3 years. So, which is good because it may just have been too hard. I don't know.
Yeah.
So you mentioned to me that something that's a really big deal to you is something that you call haven making. And I wanted to talk about that.
Yes. Yes. So I have a space in downtown Bryan where I live that's sort of my little studio space. And I did not have a name for a long time. And as I was praying through and asking the Lord what he wanted me to use it for and what I was supposed to do with this place that he gave me, I came up with the name The Haven. And so as I'm coming up with this, I had a friend say, "Wynn, you know, that is who you are. Like, you are a haven maker." And so what I say that, it just, I love to create spaces of connection and belonging for women specifically.
Okay.
So I am a connector. I love people. I love meeting new people. I love connecting people to each other. I'm not necessarily, I love to host, but I'm not like this great cook or this great, like, I'm going to have this big tablescape. Like, that is not my thing. Like, I am just more about bringing the people together, creating an environment where they feel safe and they feel like they can just be themselves and they can belong and they can just connect.
Yeah.
So
tell me about the studio space. How did you come upon studio?
Well, my husband was looking for an office space in downtown Bryan. It's like this cute little historic little downtown. And he found this building that this attorney was renovating. And he's like, "This is so cool. It's like way too cool to be my like lame-o oil and gas office." So he just challenged me. He's like, "This should be yours." I'm like, "What am I going to do with that?" And I used to be a photographer and I had sort of a studio in my home. And so I had a bunch of furniture that could easily translate from that space to this space. It wouldn't have fit in our home. And it's a place where I keep all my noonday stuff, which is nice to get that all out of my house.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I work down there 2 days a week. I have two photographers in town who sublease from me who are down there a few days a week. And then on nights and weekends, we just have different events where we gather people. So I'm actually in the middle of, I just started an Instagram and I'm trying to stockpile all the stories of the different things that we've done there for the past year to sort of give people an idea of what happens and see how else God might be able to use it.
That is so fun. I love that.
Yeah, but I feel like it's like an anointed place. Like, I love it when I do events down there with people who don't have the same friends as me. And so there's people who don't know each other.
Okay.
And almost every time there's some friendship that is birthed from the women just being there.
That is wonderful. Okay. So I need to ask you though, the process of, I'm sure at the beginning you thought, "I love connecting people, but I can't because, like you said, I'm not this cook or I don't have this amazing centerpiece or whatever." So tell me about your process of becoming free from like all of that, because that's not the gift and that's perfect. But to walk in the gift that you do have, what did that look like?
Yeah, oh, that's a great question. I feel like it really shifted when we moved here to Bryan, and I really just started walking with a group of girls who were super authentic and real and just loved me for who I was, mess and all, and who didn't really care about all these jobs or titles that I had. They just loved me for me, and I feel like that gave me a lot of freedom to just really walk out in who I was supposed to be. And we didn't really host that much in Midland, which is hilarious because now, and this house that we have is so perfect for having people over, and we know that it was such a gift from the Lord. And so we've just, since we moved in, we're like, "Okay, we want to use this for you. Like, what do you want us to use this for?" And so I think it took a lot of years of like self-talk of like, "Okay, it doesn't have to be perfect. Doesn't have to be perfect. Like, invite people into your mess." I'll never forget when we first moved in, it was like a Monday morning. My house was a disaster. I was still in my pajamas. I didn't even have a bra on. And one of my neighbors who I never met came and knocked on my door and ended up coming in and talking for an hour. And I'm like,
aww.
I was like, "Come in. I love this. Like, this is great. Like, this is me. Like, this is my house." Yes. It is what it is. And it's so freeing to not have to have everything perfect all the time. And I feel like that's what attracts people. Like, we went to dinner at this girl's house when we first moved here. And she was like, "Hey, I'm going to have you over for dinner, but I'm just warning you, it's a crazy day. So I'll probably pick up pizza. We'll probably eat on paper plates." And I'm like, "That's awesome." And we did. Our kids played. Her house was a disaster. We ate on paper plates. I brought wine and salad. And I was like, I would have been so intimidated if I came over to your house for the first time and it was perfect and we sat down and we had a nice meal. But because this was like real life and you just invited me in, like I felt so comfortable and at home.
That's great.
And so that's just the kind of environment that I want to provide for people too.
So valuable, because we do. And I would flip my freaking lid if things weren't just right. Like I almost left a dinner party because I made this meal and it was terrible, is when we first got married. And I just couldn't handle if it wasn't just right. And something funny happened this last couple days ago. There was two house guests I knew were coming, but I thought they were coming next week. So all this week I was going to be like,
oh my gosh,
getting everything sorted, whatever. And I get out of church and I checked my messages and they were like, hey, do you want us to come for lunch? And I'm like, oh my goodness gracious. And it was very, I just had to laugh because there was nothing I could do because they were going to be there in 30 minutes, no, not 7 days. Yeah. Anyway. So yeah, I kind of felt proud of myself for not freaking out, because I could tell that I'm becoming a grown up where I can like manage things, and I'm becoming more comfortable with who I am, that I'm okay with things going terribly, terribly wrong. And we had a great time. We had a great time.
See, that's what matters.
But they just did not sleep on clean sheets.
Hey, I spent the night at somebody's house before they forgot to put the sheets back on the bed, and I just slept with no sheets. I didn't care. There you
go. I know.
Fine.
So funny. Oh my goodness. Okay, so you mentioned to me that you feel like women are trapped these days, and I wanted to talk about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that they can be. I think that if you don't know yourself, if you can't own your own stuff, if you don't have people to walk with you through that deep, messy, yucky stuff, then it can be so isolating, trying to be perfect all the time, trying to act like you have it all together. And I have just seen major destruction in people's lives when they haven't been able to be honest with themselves or with their people. Mm-hmm. And it just breaks my heart.
Is that something that you had to walk through, or is just something you're observing?
Yeah, no, both for sure. I mean, I think I grew up being a stuffer, just being who everybody expected me to be and falling in line and doing what I was supposed to do. And I mean, it took a lot of years of trying, of hard and messy, to figure out who I really am as myself and to let people in to walk alongside me. And it's still a process that I'm still, you know, going to counseling and have a group that we meet with consistently that really wants to know those places and wants to help me sort of own my baggage, to then own it, deal with it, own it, walk out of that, and then be able in turn to walk with other people that are going through the same thing. So
what kind of helped you turn that corner to start letting people in?
That's a great question. I don't know if it was just years of God softening my heart, of people pulling it out of me and being like, I'm not going anywhere. Like I'm going to sit here with you and I want to know, like, tell me.
Yeah.
Or just years of, I don't know. I think it's just sort of all of it.
How would you recommend to someone who feels like they're not letting people in because they don't trust people because they've only had a bunch of bad decisions? And you're talking about these women who've come around you and said they're not going anywhere. How did you find those women? Because I bet there's a lot of isolated people who want women like that.
Totally. And that is, I wish that there was like, this is the answer. This is what you do. I mean, I think it's something that if your heart desires, it's something you're constantly praying about and you're asking the Lord to bring you. And I think he'll be faithful to that. And I think you also can't just sit around and wait for those people to come to you. I think you have to put yourself out there in some sense and go to them and say, oh, like, there you are. Like, I need this. I want this. And
going first is hard. So I think my friend Kristen talks about going first, but I think it's so important.
Yeah. And even if it's just two people or one person at first that you can be vulnerable enough with, I think you just have to look for it. You have to ask for it and be patient for it. I mean, it might not happen right when you want it to. And obviously things change and seasons change and maybe you're starting over trying to find that again. But I think it's worth it. I think it's worth praying about it, looking for it, going first.
Yes. Every time that I've been in a place where I felt really isolated and I didn't want to be, God has been faithful when I've asked him to bring someone or several someones.
Yeah.
He knows what we need. Sometimes it just takes a little bit for us to know what we need.
Yeah.
So I had a question and I did not prepare you for this. So hold on to your hat. What is the best thing that your mom did to prepare you for success? What's something you remember about your mom?
Well, something I always say about my mom is I always remembered waking up in the morning when I was living at home and seeing her in her chair with her Bible, in her journal. And I could like cry thinking about it, just with her coffee, just setting that example for me that you have to be in God's word. I know that she prayed for me. She always says, if you're not praying for your kids, who is? She would write me these little prayer cards every week. And was specific. I mean, up until like when I got married, from when I was like in junior high, like every week, like she would literally bring me a card in college every week with a home cooked meal with her prayer card.
Oh, wow. So what's on a prayer card?
She had these cards made that had like the date and it had a scripture. And then she would just write out a little prayer. But it was something that she either knew I was going through or, I don't know, maybe just mother's intuition was praying over me. And she actually, they just moved. And she's been bringing me box after box of my stuff that has been sitting in her garage. And so she brought me, I mean, I still have all the prayer cards. They're in my garage somewhere. So I'll have to go through them. And I'm sure if I look back and I can just see how God answered some of her prayers.
That is so special. I've never heard of such a thing.
Yeah.
And bringing it along with food. That's amazing.
Oh my gosh. I was so spoiled because I went to college. I went to Baylor and I grew up in Waco. And so for 3 years, after I moved out of the dorm, she would bring me and my roommates a home cooked meal every week.
My goodness.
Isn't that awesome?
Yes.
And then she would come back and get the dirty dishes.
What?
Now, I think she could have trained me to actually clean them and bring them back to her.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. You know, what I'm hearing about from that as well is she was obviously thoughtful. She was in the Word. She loved the Lord. She prayed for you. But she consistently did these things. You know, consistently the prayer card, consistently the meal, consistently in her chair.
Oh, yeah.
Consistently is the hard part.
So hard.
Because I could probably do super good at like 3 prayer cards.
Oh, I know. I've started little books for my kids where I try to write out prayers and I'll be like, oh, I haven't written in this in a year. Oops.
Yeah. Consistency. So that's what makes the memory, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So when there's a mom and she's just really having a hard day and she feels discouraged and this mom thing is maybe harder than she originally thought. Mm-hmm. What would you tell her?
Giving grace to ourselves is huge. Not having to have it all together or be perfect all the time. I've been really big on talking a lot lately about self-care and doing those things that fill you back up. Because if you are completely drained and you're still trying to pour out to your kids and pour out to your husband and your home and all the other responsibilities we have as women, you're going to have nothing left to give. I challenged this group of college girls actually the other night to think about what are the things, like name a few things that fill you up. For me, that could be going to the coffee shop, stealing an hour to go by myself and write, or taking a hot bath after the kids have gotten to bed, or I have sort of like a little window of time a few days a week where one kid is resting and one kid is about to get home from the bus, and like making myself sit in my chair and turning off my phone and reading a book for 30 minutes. So I think if we can take care of ourselves and give ourselves grace and know that we're not alone. And I think that's where community comes in a lot too. I mean, there are days where I group text, you know, my friends here, like, I'm really struggling today. Please pray for me. And just being that person that goes first, being that person that's vulnerable to say, like, I'm really struggling. Like, could y'all pray for me? I think that's huge too.
That's good. I mean, because that is a way to care for yourself, is to reach out and say, I need support right now. Rather than just trying to do it all yourself.
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard to be the broken record that's always the one that's asking for a prayer, asking for help. But
it's so freeing for other people to go, oh my gosh, wind's broken too.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So I have one final question for you. What, the one I always ask at the end, what can you not stop talking about these days?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I'm super obsessed with like personality tests.
Yes.
And like knowing yourself and whatever. So I just took the StrengthsFinder test last week. And
okay.
So I have been.
What'd you come up with?
Talking to everybody about that. So, you know, it tells you your top 5 strengths. So mine were empathy,
connector.
Includer.
Really? Because you're talking about, okay, well, that's kind of similar.
Yeah. Includer, positivity, and communication.
All right.
That's been really, do you know what WOO stands for?
My friend Heather is that.
Yes, she is.
Tell me more about it.
It stands for winning others over.
Okay.
And as I read that, that's what I think about with the connectedness, because it's all about, you know, like I'm always trying to, if I have two people together, I'm like, okay, you would like this person because both of your husbands are in the military, or you would connect with her because of like, I want to give you like a leg up on why you could connect with this person. And get you talking.
That's so sweet.
And so that's part of winning others over.
That's great.
But it sort of makes me laugh. I feel like a lot of people that have it are like, oh, I have woo. But it's like, embrace it. Own it. Like, it's your natural strengths. Like, that's what the StrengthsFinders is. It's your natural strengths. So it's not like, let's not focus on trying to make our weaknesses better. Like, let's look at our strengths
exactly. And
get those better.
That's great. I love that. I took mine. I think like a lot of people, like you were just mentioning, oh, this is what I am. I'm good at administration, you know, things like that. I wasn't super excited.
Right. You want to be what somebody else. Oh, I wish I was this. I wish I was that. But it's like, own who you are. That's who God created you to be. And that's who you are. So just go with it.
And did you find that at the 16 personalities?
Oh, yeah. It's like Gallup StrengthsFinder. It's like $15 to take the test, but it's totally worth it.
Awesome. Well, Wynn, thank you for talking to us today. I have loved it.
Thank you for having me. I've loved listening to your podcast.
Thank you. And I'm so thankful for what you guys are doing with Carrie Camp. It's so important. And I will put everything in the show notes for people to come find it and hopefully go on the retreat.
I know. I would love it. Love it.
Well, you have a good rest of your day.
Thanks. You too. Okay.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Well, I loved all of that. The Real Moms Club. It is so not something that feels true right away for everybody. But it's sure not talked about a lot because you're not really supposed to feel that way. I think for many of us, we find ways to disqualify ourselves in our role as moms. Maybe we feel like a quote-unquote real mom, but just not a quote real good mom. You guys, that's baloney. The enemy, who by the way wants to destroy you, says in John 10:10, he is not a fan of you. He's going to do whatever he can to make you believe that you're a complete failure at being a mom. And you know what? I am not a fan of that. So own it, ladies. We are not perfect, but we sure put our hearts into this motherhood thing. We love our kids, we pray for those jokers, and we just have to trust God with the rest. So what will your strategy to struggle well be this week, based on what Wynn said? Maybe you can tell your friends specifically how they can help you through a rough season that you're in right now. They can't read your mind, but they do probably really want to help. Maybe you're feeling isolated and you need to put on your brave pants and be the friend that you wish you had to someone else. Maybe your kids are older and you could try that prayer card / home cooked meal thing. Mom, if you're listening, I would like chicken parmesan, please. Thank you so much. And Wynn didn't mention this, but if you go to thecarriecamp.com, you can actually donate money so that someone else can go to the Carrie Camp. If that's not something that is a great fit for you, maybe you could bless someone else. The links to everything that Wynn mentioned is going to be at momstrugglingwell.com, so head there for anything that you missed. Thank you guys so much for spending your precious few quiet moments with us today. There are 4.5 kajillion podcasts that you could be listening to. I get that. So thanks for including me in your list of podcasts. Have a great week of struggling well.